Hello and welcome to episode 24 of the Writing Talk podcast with me, Mikey Campling. I will just whiz through a little bit of news in a second. We'll be diving into the main topic, which this time is all about dealing with negative criticism. And we'll have a bit of a discussion on our Writers Clinic feature, and we'll finish up with this week's Writers Toolbox. Welcome to the Writing Talk podcast, a show that helps you to build your skills as we go on our writing journey together. Okay, well, I haven't been doing a huge amount in the world of writing since we last had this conversation with each other. I've been on a holiday, and although I did take lots and lots of stuff with me, I didn't really end up using it. I kind of needed that break. So I haven't really written a word other than I've written some notes for this podcast. But also it means there's been a gap in the schedule. I'm sorry about that. I did take some equipment with me, a laptop and a small microphone, but I did some testing and just the sound quality, it was just awful, really. And I do try and get the sound quality as nice as I can for these things and spend a bit of time processing it and stuff. And you just can't sort of fix a really lousy recording. So I'm afraid I just thought, well, I'd rather wait till I get back and give you a proper one. So here we are having a proper one. I did try and keep in touch with the Facebook group while I was away. That was a nice thing to be able to do. We're still a small number, but come along and join up. You'd be made very welcome, whatever your level of writing confidence and competence. We're all in it together. So if you fancy joining in with that, that's over on facebook.com/groups/WTP workshop, which of course stands for Writing Talk Podcast. So come along over there and request membership, and then you can post and ask questions and things and answer for other people. Okay, so I think with that brief bit of news, we will launch into the main topic. Okay, negative criticism, that's our main topic this time. We've all had it, we've all had to deal with it at some point, whether it's online or whether it's from people we know and so on. It can be very hard to take. It can feel personal. It can feel quite hurtful. It can make you feel like giving up. But that is the last thing you should do. That's our emotional response. All those things, they're part of our emotional response, that criticism. But let's see if we can sort of use our head over our heart and let's try and break it down and see if we can get anywhere with it in a step to dealing with that. So first thing I'd say is don't overreact. Don't sort of dive overboard and think, oh, somebody said this, so I must go and do exactly what they've said. You can't try and please everyone every time. It just won't work. And often the kind of people who go and leave negative reviews for things, they're sometimes quite wide of the mark, really quite way off base with the things that they've said. And it can make you feel lousy because you think, well, if they think that, I must have done a rotten job. But, you've got to make some allowances for people's interpretations and different viewpoints. You don't know where they're coming from. You don't know whether they're a regular reader in your genre or what. So, don't overreact to these things. Be prepared to stick to your guns. This person may well be wrong and you may well be right. So just bear that in mind as well. Especially irritating are those negative reviews that you sometimes get on Amazon, because they don't just feel like they're kind of knocking your craft or your book or your work, whatever, but they kind of feel like they're damaging your income and your business as well, and your future success that you're hoping for. And so that can really kind of make you annoyed and angry and hurt or whatever. But actually, just worth taking a step back from that, because sometimes these can serve as a pointer for other readers, because perhaps that person wasn't in your intended audience and that's why they've left a negative review. And if that's plain in the review, then that might steer other people away from it. Yes, but then you probably wouldn't want them anyway, because they're probably not going to enjoy it, and maybe they're going to leave a negative review as well. On the other hand, some people might see that negative review and think, oh yeah, they don't like that, but actually that's the kind of thing I really do like. So they will come along and it will help you to find your intended audience, perhaps. For instance, just as a concrete example, maybe somebody leaves a negative review because they don't like, say, profanity in your work. And so they leave that and they mention that, you know, how cross they are about the fact that you've used some swear words. Other people might think, ah, yeah, well, actually, that's par for the course for this genre. And really, it's what I'm, you know, that's one of the things that I enjoy. It gives you a bit of an edge, whatever. That kind of thing, it can really help. Similarly, somebody might complain about the presence of too much romance, or perhaps they feel there's a lack of romance in the book you've written. And so that can help people who are looking for your book. You know, they think, oh, good, I don't like romance, or, you know, whatever. So they can help as sort of signposts and hints to your target audience. And people do look at them, and often I'm afraid people tend to sometimes skim over the good ones and look down to the bad ones, because there might be lots and lots of good ones, but they'll be put off by a few negative ones. But, you know, it could be that there's something in that, that it's a question of taste, and it might help people with the right kind of taste to latch onto your book. So it might not be as hurtful as you first thought. Watch out, though, if you're getting any hint from a negative review that the reader was disappointed that because their expectations didn't match what they got. And maybe that's something you've done in the way that you've presented your work. So, for instance, it could be your cover or your product description or even the title. Those are all signposts, and they do set up expectations for the reader. So if you've set up an expectation of one thing, say your cover and your title suggest a horror story, and in fact it's rather, you know, a mild-mannered, you know, detective cozy mystery or something, then people are going to be disappointed, and that's perhaps why they've left that negative review. It doesn't mean you've written the book badly, but perhaps you have not set up the right kind of expectations, the right kind of magnets to pull your ideal readers in. And again, do those negative reviews give you any clues that will help you to target your readers more efficiently? Can you use them? So rather than react to them and think, okay, I'm really upset or hurt or angry or whatever, can you use that to reevaluate how you're going about presenting your work? You know, use it as a tool. For instance, is there anything that you could look at in your Amazon key phrases? So that's those seven sets of phrases that you have. Remember, not words, but seven sets of phrases, no matter how many words are in each phrase. You have as many as you like, I believe. And you add those to each title when you put it onto your Kindle Direct Publishing dashboard, your KDP dashboard. Now, you've got to look at that and think, have you included some terms in there which are guiding the wrong kind of person to your work? It's worth evaluating these things from time to time, looking at them again, tweaking them. Are the keywords you've used fair and accurate? So if you've used something like YA or teen, is it appropriate for that group? You know, if you've used a word like horror or something, is that exactly the people you're trying to push towards? And these things, they might sound obvious, but they can be quite hard, because there is a certain kind of nuance where you write something which doesn't exactly fit into something, into a genre perhaps, or align with a certain set of keywords. So do you include them? You know, how do you go about that? It can be quite tricky to get right. And it's the kind of thing you have to tweak from time to time. And a negative review might, and I say might, you know, with a bit of caution, it might help you to reevaluate that and decide, okay, and maybe I've got that word wrong. Maybe I shouldn't be, you know, pushing my book towards these people. They're not going to like it. Okay, so worth thinking about. Similarly, the categories that you choose when you list your book for sale on Amazon, are they correct? Does your book provide what those readers will be expecting? And it can be surprisingly strange. To me, I read very widely and I read all kinds of things, but lots of people really seem to like kind of more of the same. You know, if you see some of these big-selling authors and they've kind of found a formula that works and more or less stuck to it, and fair enough, you know, they've found what people are looking for, they found what people like, and they know they can deliver it consistently, and they go for it. And, you know, make a great living out of it doing it as well, and lots of popularity and success. But, you know, having that wrong, aiming a really good book at the wrong crowd, is going to get you negative reviews. So just something to watch out for in your categories and your keywords. I would have a look at, see what's coming up alongside your book in searches and so on, you know, just to give you an idea, see what's coming up alongside, seeing what people are also buying and so on. Most of us, when we publish our book, it's usually quite an exciting moment. And sometimes we rush into these things and we don't really take time to evaluate our key phrases and our categories. But it doesn't matter, because you can go back and fix them. It's always worth tweaking, and just, you know, don't just set and forget them. Just look every so often and think, okay, could they be better? Be really honest when you're setting these up, and do try and find time to do a bit of research. See what other books are similar to yours and see if there's anything there you can just tweak in your own settings. Okay, on a slightly different note, are people in your negative reviews, are they mentioning errors in formatting, in grammar, or are they pointing out typos? Now here, again, sometimes people are just plain wrong. Sometimes they sort of, you know, they know this one little rule of grammar which they insist everybody sticks to, regardless of the context and the genre and so on. Sometimes people can fall down on regional variations. If you're not from the US, for instance, watch out for those phrases that will throw a US reader, because that is the biggest market. And that's something, you know, I do think about, and I am quite careful in what I do. Some of my books are in British English and some of them are in US English. Kind of depends where you're setting things as well, as I think, as what audience you're going after. And also, in the same vein, if you're in the USA, just a little nod to you, it seems quite popular that for people to include details of sports in your stories. But, you know, if you're thinking about your readership, think baseball and what we call American football are only really played in the USA. As far as I know, I'm sure somebody will correct me if I'm wrong. But to be honest, I think a lot of us get quite lost in that kind of thing. So don't assume, if you're going to refer to those things, don't assume that everybody will understand what it means. You know, we probably all know what a home run is, but above and beyond that, we're probably fairly lost as soon as you start talking about those things. So just watch out for that kind of thing. And there's a whole load of these. I mean, there are masses of references. You know, I've had, I use the phrase, if you think this, you've got another thing coming. And that is very common. That's the one I've always heard. I've never heard really anybody I know saying, you've got another think coming. But they are, you know, people argue over that, and people might suggest that it's a typo because it's only one letter different. Now, if you know when you've been brought up with one, when you hear the other, you think, no, that's not right. That can't be right. But these things can be quite sort of regional, and some things are different in different generations as well, just to be aware of. So you might want to think about the age of your audience that you're targeting as well. Just try and update some of your references. All of these things can make people think you've made a mistake, when in fact you haven't. You've just sort of got a slightly different frame of reference to them. And if you do have something that's like this, it's possibly one of the times when it might be worth responding. I know people always say never ever respond to negative reviews, you know, and true, it is always a risk. But if somebody has pointed out something which you know factually to be incorrect, then you could sort of politely say, you know, acknowledge their review and maybe thank them for their review, and just point out, without any kind of bias or edge to it, just sort of point out that it is perhaps a regional variation, you know, say thank you very much for, you know, taking the time to do this, but actually that is what we say over here, you know, that is correct. Might be worth it, just so that somebody else looking at that doesn't think you're an idiot who just makes mistakes everywhere. I mean, if people are saying, oh, you've got typos and grammar errors and so on, and maybe you have, if you realise that with a dreadful sinking feeling that you have got these errors. And to be honest, sometimes, no matter how many times editors go through things, you can always find things slipping through or being introduced at later stages. But it does let you know that you really must try and find a really good editor to work with, preferably, hopefully, a different person to have a proofreader as well, just to zip through. If you can find someone, and if you can afford it, it's really great to have as many pairs of eyes as possible. Now, hopefully, somebody qualified and experienced to do your proper editing, because well-meaning friends may have a go, but they probably don't quite have the same skills as a qualified editor or an experienced editor. Again, if somebody's pointed out a typo and you've then subsequently, you know, fixed those things or had them edited perhaps, I guess it wouldn't hurt just to acknowledge that by responding to the comment saying, thank you for pointing it out, I've now had that fixed. And then, you know, again, somebody looking at that would see that you've done something about it, because these things can happen. And I think people don't mind people making mistakes. They kind of expect it up to a point. But if you've had it pointed out to you and you haven't done anything about it, it doesn't look so good. Now, sometimes people will leave a negative review and they just haven't really liked a character or the ending or the plot or some, you know, some particular aspect. And then again, have a look at what were their expectations that you set up. What were they, you know, in terms of your cover and your title and your product description, your blurbs and things? Have you matched your book to those? And are you targeting it at the right people? Because there are kind of genres where people will look for certain things, you know, like in romance books, people often say, oh, I'm not an expert on the romance field, but I know people say, oh, the happily ever after ending is kind of a thing you must have, and people will be quite cross if you haven't for a lot of those, and so on. You know, if you're writing a murder mystery, they'll be wanting to see the body, they'll want suspects and so on, they'll want some twists and turns, you know, they'll want a good ending where they jolly well know who did it and why and so on. They'll want it all to come together at the end, and if you go off at some sort of literary tangent, they're not going to be very pleased with you. So just check that you haven't got some work to do there, because it could just be a matter of taste. Just worth saying here that some people do have a bit of a tendency to show off in reviews. They try to make themselves look clever, and they might use some literary phrases. They might talk about character development and arc and structure and so on. And they often tend to dress up their response in these terms. Try and look beyond that. You know, some of it is just bluster, I think. All they're really saying, I think, most of the time anyway, is they're basically saying, I didn't like it, which is fine. Not everybody likes everything, okay? I'm sure we can all agree on that. But they do kind of dress it up in these terms. You know, they might say, oh, I didn't enjoy the character development or something. It doesn't mean you have made a mistake. It doesn't mean you are wrong and you should sort of, you know, go mad and sort of think, oh, I've got to rewrite it all or whatever. It might be absolutely fine what you've done. Try and read between the lines. The reviewers are not particularly objective and they're not necessarily experts, even though they might try to sound like one. Okay, that's one of the things. Sometimes people are trying to show off their bit of education and you kind of think, okay, yeah, you took a couple of English classes, fine. It doesn't make you an expert. It doesn't make you qualified. So look for it. If there is something you can learn, always, I'd say, there's kind of two sides to this. Look for what you can learn from it, but also just be a bit wary from going off the deep end. Look out and think, well, are they correct? Is that just their interpretation? Is it just a matter of taste? And often it is. Reading is a very subjective experience. And sometimes people think, well, I didn't particularly enjoy that. Why didn't I enjoy it? I'm off to write a review. And then they'll make up something which kind of justifies their response afterwards. Okay, that can happen. We all do that. We all justify things afterwards, I think. And that kind of takes me on to the world of book bloggers and so on, and book YouTubers, which is a sort of a relatively recent phenomenon, I think. There's a lot of people out there. Oh, and of course, there's book review podcasts as well. Now, some of these folks, I think they're absolutely great. They're trying to give back to the community. You know, they enjoy reading. They want to share great books. And that's all really their aim. I've heard this called literary stewardship. And I think that's a wonderful thing. I mean, I've done some of that myself. I've done YouTube videos and things where I wanted to share a book, especially if I feel it's kind of an underrepresented book, a book that maybe people have forgotten about, but actually is really, really worth getting into. I've done a few of those on my YouTube channel. Not very many. I must do some more. But some of these people, I'm afraid, are just kind of throwing their weight about a bit. They're not professional reviewers. They're not professional literary critics. They don't work for prestigious newspapers or anything, do they? I mean, when you get down to it, they're just ordinary people with a platform which they've gone out and got for free somewhere, and they have their opinions. Now, they will sometimes dress those opinions up as fact. They will state that there's something wrong with a book or a character or the ending or whatever. You know, they'll pick some aspects of it, say, okay, this is a problem with this. And no, actually, that is just their taste. That's their interpretation. They think it's a problem, but they want to sound knowledgeable. They want to feel like an expert for 15 minutes, okay? And, you know, I'm not trying to be too horrible about them. Everybody is free to speak their mind at the moment. I'm doing it now, for goodness sake. So, you know, I'm not knocking these people too much. What I'm trying to get you to do is just weigh up what they are saying and try and not to be too upset about it. Not to think, oh no, I've got to throw up my book, I've got to give up or whatever, but just to think, okay, is there something I can get for it? Or was it just their taste, their interpretation? They just didn't like it that much. Nothing really you can do about it. If you're going to court reviews from book review sites, just do check their sites carefully. I kind of don't do it much anymore myself, but there are people who say, oh, it can be, you know, absolutely fundamental to your success if you can get lots of good mentions and things. I don't know. I mean, look at their site. Are they dealing with books that that speak to your target audience, really? Are you going to be on the same page? Are they dealing with people of the right age, for instance? Is the tone of it correct? Is it going to be worthwhile? Or is it just going to be a waste of time talking to them? I mean, I once went to quite a bit of effort to put a nice package together and sent somebody a book, Trespass. And, you know, I got this kind of rather opinionated review come back. And it was, to give you an idea of the tone, it was littered with these animated GIFs, you know, scattered throughout. And I kind of thought, yeah, okay, we're not going to get on, you know, that they're not my people, you know, and I don't think they necessarily representing my readership. So it was kind of upsetting a bit because I thought, well, I've made quite a bit of effort here. I've you know, sent them lots of nice material. I put lots of stuff together for them so they could, to make it easy. And I was hoping it would be at least kind of fair and objective. I didn't really feel like the reviewer had done me the courtesy of presenting a fair and balanced review. And really what the review was about was the reviewer. They were kind of showing off themselves and mucking about a bit. And, you know, I couldn't learn anything from that. If there were some parts they liked and some parts they didn't, well, yeah, I mean, that's going to happen with any reader. So, you know, if you get a negative review on a site, well, was that person in your target audience or not? And if not, then, you know, do you really care about it? It's probably just forget about it, you know. Either learn from it and move on or just ignore it completely. And as I've mentioned before, the received wisdom is not to respond. I didn't respond to that other review because you don't know, you know, they might make things worse. They might kind of get angry that you've responded to them. And yes, people are entitled to their opinion. You know, if they don't agree with you, fine, just let them go and get on with it. No one wants to have a spat online. I think that could be damaging all round. I mean, unless somebody's made an error of fact, as I mentioned earlier, which you could correct them factually, then I wouldn't bother too much because, you know, it's their site, it's their platform, and they can say what they want on it, can't they? If there is something you can learn from one of these reviews, you know, perhaps somebody's, you feel has maybe misinterpreted something, then one way of responding without responding directly to the reviewer and sort of stirring things up is you could perhaps add some explanatory notes, perhaps in an afterword or an author's note, which could be before or after your book, just to sort of set the record straight on certain things. For instance, some writers like to add a note on their product description page on Amazon to explain that they use UK spellings, for instance. You know, they say, I'm a UK author. This is set in the UK. I use UK spellings. Just, you know, one sentence, just to let everybody know so people aren't upset having, you know, bought the book and suddenly realised that. I mean, if you can, if there's a possibility for confusion or for anybody to not interpret something in the way you want them to, it's always better to avoid that at the outset rather than try and put the record straight afterwards. So, you know, make clear in your product description, is your book part of a series? If it ends perhaps in a cliffhanger style ending, or there's an element of suspense there, might be worth mentioning that. Definitely, if your book is particularly short, you might want to mention that, because I know that the information is there on Amazon, but people don't always kind of realise. You don't want them kind of rushing through something going, oh, hang on, this was actually really short, you know. Try and be consistent if you're describing something. For instance, the word book is quite open to interpretation, and some people will be expecting a 100,000 word novel. So, you know, if you've done a novella or a short story, worth mentioning that up front in the product description so that people just know what they're getting for their money or downloading for free, whichever. And just to add a word on responding again before I sort of go off that topic, if someone's taken the time to write a review on their blog or YouTube channel, then even if you don't agree with everything they've said 100%, it doesn't hurt to show your appreciation that they've actually taken the time to do it, because the last thing you want to be is ignored. You know, it's better to have something which you don't quite agree with than to have nothing at all. So there was one post that put and yeah, the like most people, of course, he had some bits, this review had some bits they liked more than others. So I went onto their, blog, and I made the time to say thanks for reviewing it. And I just mentioned, without kind of referring to them or to the review itself, I said it's always interesting to see how different readers respond to different parts of the book or different aspects of the book, which is just a statement. It's not an emotional thing in any way. It's not getting into any arguments. I'm not saying, yes, I like that, but you were wrong about, you know, I don't want to argue with anybody. And, you know, the person was pleased, I think, that I'd done that, and just kind of be a bit bigger than that if you can. You know, you don't want to be sort of petty, squabbling type person. You can rise above it. And, you know, it doesn't give anybody any ammunition if you just say, okay, well, thanks. You know, thanks for your review. It was interesting to read it. And it does kind of show you to be the bigger person as well. And if somebody reads that, they'll think, oh, okay, that person's actually pretty cool. Worth doing, worth thinking about. And of course, one of the things that you can do to help you deal with the negative reviews, those moments when you first read them, is just always remember the positive ones. You know, if you've got some favourite ones, have them somewhere where you can keep them, just in case anything gets deleted. Worth doing anyway, because Amazon does sometimes delete reviews, which is very annoying if they decide that you're in cahoots with somebody. I've had lots of reviews deleted. Amazon seems to think that you're in cahoots with somebody just because you've got a connection on Facebook or something. Well, that's not the case, of course. But they still delete them anyway. And there doesn't seem much you can do about it. But anyway, worth just, you know, doing a quick copy and paste or something. If you've got some nice reviews, you might be able to use them somewhere. But also, they'd just be quite a nice bit of comforting thing. Well, actually, you know, lots and lots of people have liked my book, and this person said this wonderful thing. And those moments are worth just treasuring and cherishing, and just, you know, keep those in mind. So if somebody does sort of have a bit of a daft moment on your book, then at least you can remember the other ones. And by the way, another thing that's just occurred to me, apparently some of these reviews are actually false, some of these one-star reviews, because there are places where you have these places where people are being paid illicitly to write good reviews. They don't want Amazon to spot that they're going through writing all these five-star reviews for products. And so they randomly kind of throw in a load of one-star reviews for products on Amazon and just say, oh, it was awful or something, with no explanation. So if you ever wondered where things like that come from, it could be from one of these sort of click farm things where, you know, you've got rooms full of people bashing out reviews and getting paid. And those people really are breaking the rules. So I kind of hope Amazon does catch up with those guys eventually. And always remember the good ones. And on that note, I think I will move on to the Writer's Clinic. Okay, so this comes from the Facebook group again, which you can find at facebook.com/groups/WTB workshop. And a link will, of course, be in the show notes. I'll paraphrase it, but somebody was asking how much detail is too much when it comes to sort of technical knowledge? How much of that should you put in for, you know, characters have a specialist subject or, you know, perhaps some kind of card game or sport or some aspect of technology is really important to them and to their plot. How much of that should you explain to the reader? And we've all come across this perhaps when we're reading books where someone has these special interests and skills and a writer has explained it in immense detail in one great big block, often quite near the beginning. This does kind of hark back to the info dump program we had the other day. Might be worth you going back and looking at the info dump episode. And a lot of the messages are the same for this. As I've said before to you, I think as a reader, I'd much rather have some questions in my mind than be bombarded by facts. You know, what would you prefer as a reader? Do you mind having a bit of suspense and a bit of, oh, I'm not quite sure what's happening there? No, probably not. You're probably quite happy with that. Whereas if you think, oh no, here he goes again, you know, we're on page 3 of How to Play This Card Game or Other, you know, nobody's happy with that. I mean, and anyway, we don't want to do too much work for the reader. You know, rein back on the details, drip them in gently. It's okay for people to refer to things which the reader won't understand straight away. We can wait, as long as it's exciting. I mean, it'll give us a reason to read on, won't it? If we think, oh, I'm not quite sure what that's about, what's going to happen there? We'll read on in order to find out. That's why we read stuff, isn't it? To actually find out what's going on. So it's a really good time to practice your economy when you are giving details like that. Try and say as much as you can with as few words as possible. And if you can sort of drip things in as you go, that'll be fine. We'll pick up on it. If it's relevant to something interesting that is happening at that moment, we might need a bit more background detail. If nothing is happening at that moment, then your reader has no reason to keep turning the pages. So, you know, you've got to keep them entertained. You know, it's a story, not a lecture. And the more we, you know, leave our readers to do a bit of work, I think the better. It just made me think of, I used to watch the popular US hospital drama ER, and loads of that medical stuff. I used to sometimes wonder to myself, what is that thing? What is that? You know, what is a Chem 7? You know, I can remember some of these now. They used to say something, something and lights. They used to say, but I even asked people who were in the medical profession in this country, and they said, well, I don't know, they must call it something different in America. I don't know what that is. But it never really mattered. It was all part of it. It was part of the texture of it. It was part of the drama of it to me. And we've probably all done this. You know, we watch police procedurals and we watch detective things. We get into all sorts of obscure worlds where that sort of esoteric information is part of it. And the challenge of finding out what that is all part of the enjoyment. It's part of the experience. We don't want to know straight off. We don't want it explained to us. We want to think, oh, what's that? I'll hold on to that in the back of my mind. You know, it's a little puzzle for us to work out in our reading. So bear that in mind. You know, let people do that bit of work and they will thank you for it. They will actually enjoy not being told. Okay, so I think that's on balance where I will end that part. For more discussion, go over to the group, join the group and post your own questions. They can be sort of imponderables, as that one was, you know, because you could argue either way how much information to include on something like that. It can be a small problem you're having at the moment, or it could be just something you're pleased with. Anything you can share, very welcome in the group. Okay, for this week's Writer's Toolbox, I am going to do the opposite of every other podcast or every other YouTuber about writing and so on. So I'm an awkward person. I'm going to say stop writing. I'm going to say rest is important. Have some breaks. I've just come back from a couple of weeks of not rewriting and I'm absolutely raring to go. I think you can weigh yourself far too thin. I think you can feel too much pressure and people say, oh, you must write so many thousand words a day. And yeah, it's good to have those goals. It's good to have those aims and to try and stick to them. But, you know, try and build in some rest. I mean, I've realised having this holiday that I'm not particularly good at this myself. You know, I wear myself too thin and you end up kind of washed out and you're not producing anything of value and it means you enjoy it less. So, you know, you do need to work in some rest. And I think some physical exercise as well, if you can, regularly into your schedule, even if it's just a, you know, a quick walk around the block. I must admit, I feel, you know, a bit fitter and a bit healthier. I've been doing quite a bit of swimming, quite a bit of walking through the countryside. Absolutely raring to go now. So that's this week's bit of writer's toolbox, is not to do any writing at all. And actually, I must admit, you know, strolling along a beach listening to the waves the other day, I had some fantastic ideas. I thought, oh, that's brilliant. And I just, you know, scribbled them in a book, forgot about them for a bit. And it's a really good thing to do. It does recharge your batteries. It gives your brain a bit of time to work. So, you know, I'm not talking about sort of thinking, you know, I'll put that aside for 6 months and hope to pick up where I let off. I'm just saying, have some breaks. Don't push yourself too hard. It really will help you, I think, with the quality of your work and the enjoyment of your work. And that's what we're all about here on the Writing Talk podcast, is trying to improve the quality of our work and have a good time while we're doing it. So I think I will sign off there. Please do subscribe if you possibly can on iTunes, on Stitcher or Spreaker.com or on the website at writingtalkpodcast.com. There's an email you can get there, which will send you an email every time there's an episode. And there's a separate email newsletter style thing, which will automatically go out with every new episode and has a link to the show notes as well, which is kind of handy. And, you know, there's lots of ways of subscribing over on the site. That's the best way to do is go and do the one that suits you. It's also on YouTube as well. So thank you very much for taking the time to listen. Comments always welcome, especially on the Facebook group. Love to see you over there. Do drop over there and say hi. It'd be really nice to hear from you. So sorry there's been a gap in episodes. I will try to get back into my production schedule. Or is it schedule? See, that's another thing. Get mixed up with dealing with the US audience. But, you know, I will leave it there. So thank you very much for listening. And until we talk again, keep writing, keep scribbling, keep tapping away at the keys. And above all, whilst you're doing it, keep smiling. Thank you and goodbye.